F1A, number 11A.
So, today and tomorrow, perhaps we will take the prophets and read their text. So, we approach now the prophets from a quite a different aspect, namely from the inductive way. We just can go out from the fact that for the first time in our life we open the Bible and that we begin to read, say, the prophets, and are wondering what the prophets are telling us, what is their message. And so we have to ask ourselves, how would we read the Bible? Now, the first thing would be is to read the Bible as the text shows it, and then try to understand the symbolism of that time. This is not always easy, because they use the symbols of their time, that's 2,500-600 years ago. They use symbols out of their daily life, which it was a quite a different style of life than today. They didn't have home computers and television, etc., with which they could symbolize their message. So they used their symbols of nature, of the family history. They used symbols mostly also of the wars they had with the surrounding countries, therefore more the international situation, foreign policy, then internal policy, what the judges were, how they were unjust, and so on. So the whole social surrounding of that time was taken as symbols, and because they were to a great part different from ours, it is not always easy first to understand what they actually say in the text. So, reading the text, we have first to translate or to know a little bit about the background of that time, and then the next step would be for us to see if we can translate the symbolism of the Bible into metaphysical ideas. That's the very first step. The Bible has not a literal meaning. Mrs. Eddy says that the Bible has a spiritual meaning, and the literal meaning would not do anything to us. But the spiritual meaning naturally makes that time, translates that time into our time. It brings us near into our lives, and so we begin to read in the text, so to say, our life and our life problems. So this is a first step which we want to make, that we read the text. Perhaps the best thing is I read the text, though it's always difficult for a German to read English Bible with all the old terms and terminology, with a very different pronunciation of the nouns of towns and people and so on that are in the Bible. We pronounce them very differently in German. So still I try to do it so that only one is speaking in the audience, and you forgive me if here and there I don't pronounce the terms rightly. And what I will do, I will read it very slowly. You know that I always read slowly and talk slowly, never quickly, because I like to think while I'm talking. And I read and try to read so that you can perhaps more or less see what I think when I read. That is how I try to interpret the text from the biblical text into the metaphysical text, which is necessary. That's what we want to train a little bit, so that we do that. Then, second, what we will do is, as we go on in the text, I want to point out where I would see a break in the subject, which means that we will read the Bible very, very differently than the ordinary people, no matter if it's the Catholics or the Protestants or all the various cults and so on. I want to read it as subjects, so as to take together 2, 3, 4, 5 and more verses together and say, here is a common denominator. Here the subject changes from one subject to the other. Reading a book in the Bible, perhaps we could say, is like watching a play on a stage. Well, here and there is the first act, and then the curtain falls, and then the curtain opens again, and you have a completely different scene on the stage. So there is a break, and we want to see those various breaks, those various scenes where the curtain falls and something completely new is being brought out. In doing that, naturally you can see already that helps us for a further step, namely to see a story that runs from the beginning to the end of a biblical book, so that we have the whole play in front of us and can say, yes, on the act one you have this and this, then came the act two, you say act, huh? Act two, you see, and then came something very different and the curtain falls. We call it a break instead of the curtain falls and opens, and then the third and the fourth, so that we have the whole story in view, and not only some very interesting verses that may mean a lot to us. Not the individual verse will be interesting for us, but the whole story will be of interest to us. In text interpretation, we said a very important point is also to compare the beginning with the end, to see what is the beginning, what is at the beginning the proposition, and then that proposition is developed step by step, and at the end you have the fulfillment of that proposition or the answer to that proposition, so that we see the whole story from beginning to end and see the solution of the proposition that is put at the beginning. If we do that, we can at the same time go a step further as we do it, and can say, now if I see those various acts on the stage, the various breaks in the text, then and translate it into metaphysical ideas, then we can also ask ourselves, through what synonymous term would each of these breaks be symbolized? What capitalized term could we use in order to pinpoint each one of those breaks? And naturally, when we can do that, then we translate it even further down to simplicity, just to capitalize terms. And then we can go still a step further and show, do these capitalized terms constitute an order in being? Or don't they constitute an order in being? Are they a category in being? And so we come a step further and say, well, I see in this prophet this or that or the other category of being. Now, this is what we will do as we go along reading the text. I take very short text. I select out of the minor prophets those minor prophets that have a short text. There is no other criteria in order that would lead my thought to choose the ones that we are taking. It's just the shortness of the text. Because if one is a whole group that has to think about the same thing, naturally it's much easier to have a very short text so that it can be overseen, that we have an overall view of it, and that it is easy to get that overall view. So this is the only reason that I start with Obadiah. That is the shortest text, and then we will take other short texts. But the main point will be to show how to read such a text so that we can distill out of a text the science that is in it, the category that is in it. And in order to do that, I have shown you that it takes many little steps to arrive at that point. We will do that for about 2 days, and then afterwards we will take up the same subject again in a general way and show how the order runs, or the sequences run, the steps run, how we can, from a biblical text, arrive at the matrix, the Christ matrix. So this will be the overall subject for the next few days. So I read this text here, and as I read it, and in order to encourage your thinking and your creative thinking, I will ask questions about the text. You don't need to answer it, but you can think what would be your answer, and I give the answer, so that little by little, by error and trial, or trial and error, we train ourselves over 2 days or so in this method of text interpretation. So let's start with Obadiah. And here we read the vision of Obadiah. Now, usually we know that names, proper names, like the names of people or of towns or of places in the Bible, they usually had a spiritual meaning. It was quite different than in our time in the Western civilization. And for instance, we expect a baby, we think, well, if it's a girl, what nice name shall I give to that girl? If it's a boy, what nice name shall I give to that boy? And he goes through, perhaps through a list of names, of Christian names, and feel which one we would like to take, which sounds nice, how it is adapted to afterwards to call that child, and so on. Whereas in the ancient time, they always gave to these children a spiritual significance. They always had a spiritual significance. So when we read the Bible, it is sometimes very good to have a dictionary or a Bible commentary. Also, there are little books that contain nothing else but the names and the explanation in English what those names in ancient time meant. So that we look up the meaning of it, and only too often we will find that already the name can give us an indication of what the subject is all about. Here we have Obadiah, and you know that Obadiah means the servant of Yahweh. It is saying it is that which represents God. The servant is that which does what the master says. It is the reflection, so to say, of God. And you can see with Obadiah, we have that, when we know the matrix, that second vertical, which has its accent on the Christ-like, how God is brought out as its likeness. Now, God is brought out in the representative of God, in the servant of God. And we feel at once that Obadiah will, you can't go or say 100% on it, that one interprets just from the name the whole message, but it, all this helps to give indications. And text interpretation usually starts with indication, with approximations of the subject, and only little, by accumulating all the various aspects, the real tone, the tonality of the text is crystallizing itself. So we have here the vision of Obadiah, the servant of God, the representative of God, and what he is going to show is actually what is the true and what is the right representative of God. We'll see that. Now, out of this first line, naturally, we cannot deduce that, but it gives an indication. It says, thus says the Lord God concerning Edom. Well, we don't know where Edom was, as we haven't learned that in school, in geography. You have to look up a Bible commentary again and see where on earth was Edom, what was Edom. And then you will find in any commentary that Edom was the land of the descendants of Esau. Esau's descendants were living there where today, more or less the Negev, I think you call it Negev today in Israel, is. It is that part on the Mount Sinai towards the northeast. It was adjoining that part of the Red Sea, which that Red Sea, that arm of the Red Sea that goes to Elath. Elath is the last town on that side arm of the Red Sea. So you can see it was a very mountainous country, high mountains near Horeb in the Sinai Peninsula. There it was Edom, the descendant of Esau. So they were, so to say, south of Judah, bordering again towards Judah and the Midianites. This is perhaps necessary to know, because when he goes on to show what the story is in regard to Esau and Jacob, and it is interesting to see that they were, so to say, neighbors, and that will explain quite a bit when we read on. So, thus says the Lord God concerning Edom, concerning Esau, who was the twin brother, as we know, of Jacob. And they always quarreled with each other, though they were brothers. We have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent among the heathen, saying, arise ye, and let us rise up against her in battle. So it introduces the will of God to all the heathen countries and say, all your heathen countries, come up and battle against Edom, against Esau. Arise and let us rise up against her in battle. Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen. Thou art greatly despised. So here, I guess up to this point, I would feel that there is an introduction to the whole subject, to the subject of Obadiah, which says, what is the purpose of this prophet? We are at horizontally, we are at purpose defined, you remember in the matrix. Though at that moment, if we don't know that it is a part in the matrix, we would just see, here is a call of the Lord to arise all the countries to come together and battle with Edom. to bring Eden down, because thou art greatly despised. So he begins to define Eden as that which is despised. It is that twin brother within us that has to go, that has to be eliminated, that has to be despised. And this is, so the subject is set, the scene is set, and now I think with verse 3, it begins to show why the Lord does despise Edom and why they should rise up in battle against Edom. Why should they do that? Why should the Lord make up his mind to knock down Edom? And so I feel that here the subject begins. The pride of thine heart. You feel at once he is appealing to the pride of thine heart, that to that mentality which is proud, which is, to say, high-minded, is high-minded. The pride of thine heart has deceived thee. Thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high. We know that Edom, as I said, was a very mountainous part of the Sinai Peninsula, with high mountains, with high rocks, and they were dwelling, so to say, as cliff dwellers up in those rocks, so that they were inattackable by the enemy, that they were safe up in their rock dwellings. And so they were proud and said in their heart, actually nobody can battle against us, nobody can be victorious on us, we are invincible. We have such a fortress, a natural fortress, that nothing can happen to us, whose habitation is high. You get always the pride of thine heart that is high, the habitation is high, that says in his heart, again in his heart, in his mind, who shall bring me down to the ground? And you see that pride, the pride in their heart, in their mind, nothing can happen to us. Or he says in verse 4, though thou exalt thyself, can you hear constantly the same tone, that self-exaltation, that mind which is self-exalting itself and says, nothing can happen to me, I'm victorious over everything, I can't be attacked, nothing can happen to me. It's that high-mindedness. Nothing can bring me down to the ground. Though thou shalt thyself as though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, he compares it again with the eagle as high above, and though thou set thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down, saith the Lord. So we have a first scene here that constantly repeats more or less the same tonality, the tonality which is the counterfeit of the divine mind, namely mortal mind that exalts itself, that thinks a lot about itself and says, nothing can touch me. And then the Lord comes and says, no matter how high up in the rocks you are, even if you would have your habitation high up in the stars, high up there, I would be able to bring you down. Nothing is out of my reach. And you get the terrific sense of the power of God that will bring down the self-exalted sense of mortal mind. I read on, and I don't know if he gives us another example or a few more examples about that high-mindedness, And so I just read on and listen to that same thing. Verse 5, if thieves came to thee, if robbers by night, how art thou cut off? Would they not have stolen till they had enough? And as I read that, I think this is something else. This is no more saying you are high-minded, no matter how high up your fortress is, even if you would be up in the stars, I could reach you and bring you down. I feel suddenly there is a change of tone. Suddenly it is about the robbers and thieves that would come and steal, and if they would come in and steal, they would take away everything. They wouldn't leave a thing over. So I get at once a break in tone, and I hear spiritually, here he is talking something about the substance that can be taken away, that robbers and thieves can take away all what you have. And so I would feel that after verse 4, there is a break. There is a break in subject. That now, somehow, the Bible will show that the enemy can come in like thieves and the robbers and take away everything you have. They would steal and would take away until they had enough. I go on there. If the grape gatherers came to thee, would they not leave some grapes? He has a beautiful, very pictorial language. Is that the term you can see? That he says, look, the grape gatherers. Have you ever watched the grape gatherer? Perhaps you haven't seen how the grape gatherers go in autumn into the vineyard and they gather the grapes, but they always leave some grapes over. They never take the last grape. They all take perhaps 90-95%. There is always something left over which they don't take. That's how the grape gatherers gather. But he says, the robbers and thieves that will come to Edom, they will not leave a single thing. They will really rob you entirely, 100%.